How to become time rich. Before we dive into today's episode, I want you to head on over to heatherchauvin.com/live and join our next live webinar. It's June 6th and the 13th. So I have two live dates for you if you cannot make one. Also, what I wanted to say is when I am teaching live webinars, there's a lot of doing. So create the space, bring your pen and paper, and head on over to Heather Chauvin, chauvin.com/live, L-I-V-E. How to become time rich for busy women managing people, raising children, and deeply desiring more from life.
When I suddenly lost a brother and both of my parents in less than 2 years, a lot of things happened with each one of them that, of course, caused a great deal of reflection. And probably one thing, the strongest, was my mother's last words were, "I've had a great life." And I thought a lot about that and thought, I want to be able to say that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any answers right away about how I was going to get there. But I knew one thing was absolutely the case. And that's that my, for me at least, being a lawyer at GE was not going to get me there.
Lives and feeling connected and called to make a difference is something I've seen in my own life. But there's this beauty that happens when we've had great loss in our life, which can be a loss of self, a loss of somebody else, a loss of anything, grief, pain, struggle, suffering. They always talk about how to get yourself out of that space, right? And then we go on this soul search of who am I? What do I want to do in the world? How can I make a bigger impact? When we are being of service to others, it lights us up. And so too often in this self-help industry, I see people being bought into about find your purpose. And the truth is, it's like having a really messy room and you're trying to find your favorite shirt. And of course you can't find it. And you're about to run out the door and you're like, oh my God, where is it? I remember seeing it in here. I know it's in here somewhere. And then of course you can't find it. So then you leave, you go to the party, you come home and you're like, it was right there all along, like right in front of your nose. That is purpose. There is no one purpose for everybody. And what I really like about this conversation today with Kate is how she took tragedy in her life and turned it around to make a bigger difference in the world, make a bigger impact. It just bothers me because how we're raising our children culturally is become a lawyer, become a doctor. You know, you have to make money to be successful. You have to have a big house. You have to have a good car. But really, that's not what we're after, guys, as human beings. We're after what we think those things are going to give us, right? Oh, well, if I have this, you know, if I become this person, or if I get this job, then I'll have more money, therefore I'll be happy, or I'll be able to buy this or do this. And you can be all of those things. You can be a doctor, you can be a lawyer, you can be like in corporate. You can do all of these things, but do it with meaning. Do it with a sense of purpose. If you're not attached to meaning, if you're not attached to purpose, then it's going to feel yucky. You're going to feel like cut off, that something's missing, that you're numbing yourself. And so many of you email me and I have so many conversations with you guys about, Heather, I have it all. I have the house. I have the children. I have the partner. You know, he's really supportive. The money is there, but we're living paycheck to paycheck. And what is this rat race I've got myself in? And the truth is, we have to get clear. We have to step back and we have to start at the foundation. So I think this is beautiful about what Kate said in her search for meaning. And what I also find beautiful is she left the corporate job, the corporate gig that she had as a lawyer, and how she actually started her foundation was with the corporation that she used to work with, that they sponsored her startup, which is beautiful because it just goes to show that we don't need to get rid of these things in our lives. Like people talk about get out of corporate, da da da. No, there is so much goodness there. It's how we show up in the world. You know, big corporations, yes, I'm not going to get in a political debate about money and all of that stuff, but when we utilize this power and this strength to fuel what we truly desire, we don't need to get rid of everything and move to Bali and, you know, take our children out of school and unschool them. What we need to do is start making every day, every single day, a little bit more meaningful, being more present, taking things to a deeper level with connection and kindness and compassion. And before we dive into today's interview, I just wanted to, I'll make it like, because I know this is during the holidays, but a quick note about how this has shown up in my life. As every year that goes by and every time I move away from like another year added to like what happened 4 years ago when, you know, death stared me in the face and was like, are you really going to show up in your life, Heather? I've evolved. I've grown. I've thrived. I've been on this path to better myself, to better, you know, support our family, to feel more sustainable. It's not about go, go, go. There's no hustle. It's about doing things, you know, that get me out of bed in the morning to have a life worth meaning. And yes, there are many dark and uncomfortable days and, you know, my body is still, it still plays tricks on me and it's, you know, a constant science experiment and chemistry experiment. But this is life, right? And anyone who tells you that life is perfect and they never have like a down day is lying. So do not buy into their bullshit. But the beauty of this is this year during the holiday season, my need to buy less is so strong. And, you know, I think of a little gift and a beautiful card. You know, a lot of times people are asking, oh, what are your kids getting for Christmas and what video games and all of this shit? And I'm like, that is, oh, what's Santa bringing you? And I'm just like, stop filling my children's brains with Santa equals toys and Christmas equals gifts. Because to me, it doesn't. I'm not saying that my children aren't getting presents and that they're not being celebrated, but that's just not the forefront. It's about how do I want to be remembered? How do you want to be remembered? So I'm excited for you to hear this conversation with Kate. So let's dive in.
All right. Welcome, everyone. We're doing another interview. And today we have the amazing Kate Curran. I'm super pumped and excited to have this conversation with her. I met her at Dr. Shefali's Evolve Conference. That was, what month was that? October?
September.
Okay, cool. School the world. I was like, Kate, I need to know your story. Why are you doing what you're doing? So I'm really excited to have you here. So thank you.
Thank you, Heather. Glad to be here.
So I'm going to read a little bit of your bio and then we'll jump in because I have lots of questions for you.
Okay.
So Kate is the founder of School the World, an international education organization serving more than 6,400 children in Central America. Kate started School the World after leaving her legal career at General Electric for a year-long sabbatical traveling the world. And since 2009, School the World has built 52 schools with 31 playgrounds and 296 classroom libraries, extensively trained more than 250 teachers, and empowered 4,147 parents as the first educators of their children. Kate, I'm so excited to have this conversation with you.
Thank you.
I want to know where, like, this is passion, right? This is drive.
Yes.
When people say,
I don't, you know, what's my purpose? What am I doing in the world? I know that the story of getting to where you are now and creating and cultivating this organization didn't have kitty cats and rainbows about it. So can you tell us a little bit about that background and how the School of World came out of that?
Sure. Well, I was a lawyer at GE, as you mentioned in my bio, when I suddenly lost a brother and both of my parents in less than 2 years. A lot of things happened with each one of them that, of course, caused a great deal of reflection. And probably one thing, the strongest, was my mother's last words were, "I've had a great life." And I thought a lot about that and thought, I want to be able to say that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any answers right away about how I was going to get there, but I knew one thing was absolutely the case, and that's that my, for me at least, being a lawyer at GE was not going to get me there. And I left my job and started traveling. I thought I would travel for a month. I went to Argentina and I thought I'll come back and figure it all out. And a month turned into 6 weeks in Argentina, turned into eventually more than a year of traveling around the world. And I saw and experienced a lot of things, some wonderful, wonderful, amazing, amazing things during that time. But I also saw a number of things, like 12 kids sharing two pencils in a classroom in Tanzania, or kids walking through crocodile-infested waters to get to school every day in Zambia, and countless kids working all over Argentina when they should have been in school. And by the end of this sabbatical, as I call it, I just made a decision that this is what I was going to do. I was going to start an organization to help kids like this, the most vulnerable, and focus on education and giving them a chance at a better life.
I love this. So you decide to travel the world and slow. It's like I call it the lean. Well, I didn't coin this term, but like the leaning in, right? Uh-huh. Knowing, having the ache of like, not this,
right?
Not this. I don't exactly want this. And not knowing where to go, what to do, but just going, I'm going to travel.
Right.
And then one moment led to the next to crack you open to this possibility.
Exactly.
So can you talk a little bit about, we'll talk about the organization and what specifically you do, but can you talk a little bit about that moment when you were like, you had that big scary idea, like what, then where did you go from there? Like, I'm going to start this.
That's a great question. I had given myself a year at least to not think about it. And I was coming close to the end of that year. I was in Spain. I was living in Spain for 4 months, and I was in the south of Spain with somebody I had met in Patagonia in January. And I just woke up one day and said, I can do this. And this wasn't that well defined yet. I just knew it was going to be something to help kids in the developing world. Mm. And I went home and I started talking about it. And I thought, well, I'll at least talk to a few people about it before I jump in. And I did do that, but I think I knew the whole time that I was going to do it. And so after some like informational meetings with people exploring the idea, I just jumped in.
And what does jump in mean? What does that mean to jump in? Because there is so many people like, I don't know how, I can't do this. I hear that so much from people of like, I just don't want this. I need to leave my job. And I have this crazy idea, but I don't know where or how to start.
Well, I think that maybe the legal background helped a little bit. I knew that I had to incorporate something, an organization, and that I had to get tax exempt approval from the Internal Revenue Service. So that was my first step. I knew probably too to start with state law first to incorporate, and then to go to the IRS to figure out what to do next. And I recruited some friends to help me, basically to be the officers of the beginning entity. And then I started talking to more people. And I had done a joint venture, or GE had done a joint venture in Central America when I was there. And I knew the leadership of that joint venture. And I wrote to them about what I was doing. And they said, Kate, we'll help you get started and we'll fund your first few projects for you. We think you should choose Guatemala. So that's how we ended up in Guatemala. Of course, the need there is enormous. But I had a lot of help too in the beginning.
Nice. And so now, looking back, what did you have any fears? Did you have any sticking points or things that were stopping you?
Sorry, you cut out for a minute. Can you repeat?
Yeah. So I said, looking back, did you have any big fears or anything that were always ever present?
I would not say any big fears. No, I would say, to be honest, I was fearless. Mm-hmm. I had some anxiety, I guess, like not knowing where it was all going to land, but it was all in, completely 1,000% in. I always say, I wish that everybody could do what I did, which is take a year off and go around the world and have the experiences that I did, both positive and sad. I think the world would be a better place if everybody could do that, because you're just so high on life at the end of an experience like that.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
You're just so positive about the world.
Yeah, you definitely get, even just listening to you about when you're talking about, you know, all these kids sharing a pencil or walking through, infested waters. Like, that's something my children would never experience.
Right.
Never experience. And we're recording this during the holidays. And, you know, I'm like a huge minimalist, and everyone keeps asking me, what are you getting your children for Christmas? What are you getting your children for Christmas? Or everywhere we go, what do you want from Santa? What are you getting for Christmas?
Right.
And it actually makes me want to vomit in my mouth every time somebody asks, because I'm like, we're going on vacation or we're having this experience. Why do we have, it's just a completely different mindset. And I feel like I'm not in a culture that is in alignment with my values. And I remember when my son was a little boy, I think I shared this with you, but I had my son when I was 18, and when I was in university, cause I went to university shortly after. So it was about 20. I went to Guatemala for 2 weeks, and I had this big need to go to Guatemala. I left my son with my mother for 2 weeks, and that was the most heartbreaking thing I ever had to do. But my gut was saying, go, go, go. And I never had the experience to travel, because I literally went from high school to motherhood, and I was judged for it. My mom totally supported me and was like, go. And I remember calling home and picking up the phone and listening to my son's voice. And I felt this connection that I didn't feel before. And I thought I was going to Guatemala to help these people. And really, they were just there to show me the true essence of what it meant to be alive.
Right. We have a program where we take high school students from the United States to Guatemala. It's a service learning program where the kids, they raise the money to build a 3-classroom school building, and then they travel on one of their winter or spring or summer breaks. And that is universally what each one of them walks away with. They're, you hear over and over again, I'm so humbled, because the people have nothing, really nothing. And yet they still have this capacity for warmth and love and kindness and joy, even without anything.
So there's two things that I see happening here. We have the overprivileged who think they're not privileged, because myself included, like, oh, I don't have what the Joneses have across the street, or I want more, more, more. But realizing the culture that we live in, most of us, is like this is a mansion to a lot of people. This is beyond right. possibility for a lot of countries and a lot of people. So we need to be humbleized a little bit. And then you, not a little bit, a lot. And then you have the opposite of that, where is, I guess the point I'm getting to is you're huge on education, right? Educating children in a way that they want to learn. Did you hear that?
No, you cut out again.
Okay. So you're huge on education and educating right. children in a way that they want to learn, developing right. thoughtful strategies to make sure that children are truly learning. This is a problem in all aspects of the world, right?
Right.
So can you talk a little bit more about that perspective, and then we'll jump off from there.
Well, the one thing that is true about the developing world is that resources, just resources, can still make a difference. So, you know, the first school that I visited in Guatemala, for example, was not a school. It was just a dark shack. And kids weren't even sitting on chairs. They had tree stumps they were using as chairs. And there was a blackboard, but there were no books anywhere to be found. So to me, it was pretty obvious right away. There's no way that these kids can possibly learn in this environment, particularly like during the rainy season, the rain coming in to this shack. And you see that. I mean, most of the places I visited, you would see no books whatsoever. How can kids be expected to learn without books?
Right.
So that's where we start. And then we tackle some of the more challenging issues, which are related to both teachers and parents. Parents, for the most part, are not literate themselves. And these kids are growing up in extreme poverty. They're really can be far behind by the time they even start school. And the teachers are not always, they're poorly trained, if they're trained at all, and not don't always have the best education either. So the first thing we need to do is get the parents understanding that they are the first educators of their children and that they can actually help their kids learn, even if they can't read or write themselves. And just by talking to them about school, showing an interest in school, going to the school and asking how their children are doing in school. And we found that that's very empowering for parents to realize that they have a role to play. They think that they have nothing that they can contribute. And another step, of course, is to give the teachers very extensive training. And we do that through a 2-year program, training the teachers. So these are the, you know, the critical components of our program.
So I love what you talk about with the strategy of teaching the parents, because
yeah.
I'm doing that over here, not in that capacity. And it's interesting how I think it's the human brain or human behavior to go like, I'm not making an impact in my child's life. Who I am and how I show up doesn't really matter. What do you say to that?
I think it's really empowering for parents to realize, at least in our case, for the parents to realize that it matters a lot.
Oh, you froze again. There you are.
Right. I was saying, I think it's really empowering, at least in our case, for parents to realize that they matter a lot and that they can make a difference in their children's lives.
Mm-hmm. And what has education, so there's two things. What has education done exposing the children to this? We talked a little bit about that, the kids coming over and going, oh my gosh, this is a game changer.
Right.
But what has it done for the children in the countries that you work with, the families, and what have you seen shift since you've been involved?
Well, at first, you see a lot of things shift. You see, first of all, the parents start to become very engaged in the school. And when teachers have training and they have better conditions themselves, then their morale goes up and they are more accountable to the system, to the parents, to the kids. And our whole philosophy is that once kids start actually learning, they're going to want to stay in school. And if we're working with the parents at the same time, the parents will support keeping them in school if the kids are learning. And that
My dog. Can you hear my dog in the background?
Yes. Okay.
It's a new dog. Oh my gosh. It's like having a baby.
What kind?
Oh gosh. He's from the shelter. He's half Dalmatian, half lab, and he's a year old and he has separation anxiety. So when someone goes outside or walks by, he freaks out. Anywho, so you were saying the morale goes up in the classroom. The teachers are more engaged.
Right.
And the parents want to be involved.
Right. The children, their morale is going up because they have a new school building. They have resources for the first time. Their parents are showing an interest. And our whole philosophy is that once kids start learning, the parents, they'll want to stay in school themselves and the parents will support it. And that's what we have seen now that we're able to look back at the first few schools that we started, which were, we just graduated our first, what you call cohort. So kids who were in first grade when we started and completed primary school with our support.
Yeah. That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. So Kate, I want to know more about the organization, how people can get involved, but I have a personal question for you.
Okay.
Going back, saying that your mother's words were a game changer for you and helping you go on this journey of the life, you know, my life was good, right? Life was good.
Right.
How do you want to be remembered?
Oh, gosh. I definitely would want to be remembered as somebody who contributed, somebody who made a difference in the lives of others, particularly children. You know, one of the other things that happened during that sad period was I was standing at my father's wake, and my father had been a public servant his whole life, and this gentleman came through and he said, I just had to come. I hadn't seen your father in 20 years, but when Martin Luther King was killed, your father was walking the streets of the projects. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, don't just complain. Just get involved, do something, get involved. And he said, I just wanted you to know that today, he was now in his 50s. Today, there are several awards named after me, named after this gentleman in this community where we grew up.
Wow.
And it was that also had such a big impact on me. It had me feeling like, what have I done? What have I contributed to others? You know, it was something I had grown up hearing a lot about, do something. But I didn't feel like I really had done it. So part of this journey over that sabbatical was finding my something that I was going to do.
I love that you talk about finding your something and being inspired by that. I think it shows the integrity of your parents of like, my life was good. And just by being who they were, it rubbed off on you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what, you know, my mother and I probably couldn't be more different. She had 8 children and I was 41, you know, single at the time. So who knew where this journey was going to land when I left my job. But, interestingly enough, I landed back in a very similar place as her, which was, family. And my father too, as family and service to others, just a little bit of selflessness goes a long way.
Mm. What do you feel is like, you know, when people are like, I can't find my thing. I can't find my purpose. What do you think the purpose of life is? And do you think everyone has their own purpose? And is it hard to find?
It can be very hard to find when you are on that treadmill, you know, running on that treadmill day after day after day, working long hours, doing the same things. I think that most people wouldn't advise that you just leave your job without anything else to do. It was pretty much a very drastic decision on my part. But I think if people took advantage more of those opportunities where they are in reflection, real reflection, and I think loss brings about a lot of reflection, you start to know a lot during those times, those real truths. The question is whether you're going to honor them or not.
I love that, if you're going to honor them. So I think you've also created a culture, you know, when you're talking about people can't have that opportunity, but I think you've created a culture where people can have glimpses of that opportunity into possibility, or helping them shift their mindset, or become more in alignment with who they want to be, right? Feel like at home with themselves, just trying to figure out who they are. So tell us more about School of the World. And if somebody's listening, how can they get involved? Do they have to go? Can they contribute? The holidays are coming up. How can people be of service who are listening to this?
Great question. Thank you for asking. School of the World works with the poorest of the poor in Central America and rural areas. And we really make it possible for these extremely poor children to learn and have a better opportunity in life, a better chance in life. We know that education does numerous things, like not just increase income, but delay the age of marriage for a girl, reduce the number of children that she'll have, make it that much more likely that she'll vaccinate her children. An amazing statistic is just that a child who's born to a mother who can read is 50% more likely to survive to the age of 5.
Wow.
So you're changing a lot just by providing basic education. So there are a number of things people can do to help. Giving, of course, is very important and makes it possible for us to do what we do. And our website is schooltheworld.org. And there's a donate link there where people can donate. We're also on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, where they can follow us and help build our following there. And they can also come in a variety of ways. We have this program for high school students where we bring high school students. They participate in some seminars learning about the country and poverty and social justice, and come and spend a week there.
One sec. Okay, talk again.
Okay, and the kids come and spend a week in the community every day working side by side with the parents and the kids. And we're just starting a similar program for corporations, where corporations are sending employees as a group, as kind of a morale building exercise, particularly with these younger generations that are much more socially conscious. And we're actually looking at starting a family program as well. We may have our first family trip this summer where people can come as families. Yes.
Nice.
So those are just a few of the quick, you know, you can give, follow us on social media, or participate in a deeper way.
I love this. So schooltheworld.org.
Yes.
Awesome. Is it only from America? Can Canadians come on these trips?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And Canadian high school students?
Yes, we've actually had kids from as far as Brussels come on the trips, and we're actually starting to work with, actually, believe it or not, high school in Guatemala.
Nice. So is that more upper class in Guatemala, going to see the lower class?
Exactly.
Nice.
Seeing what life is really like outside of their bubbles.
Yes. We all need to get outside of our bubbles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you go on every trip, Kate? What's your role?
I used to go on every trip when we were building the program, but it's gotten pretty big and the organization's been growing, so I can't do it anymore. I go on a couple of trips a year as a chaperone, and I go on a couple of trips a year by myself to spend time with the team and in the communities and observe and understand at a deeper level what's happening.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I love the message behind it. I love your why. And it just shows you possibility. And I love the conversation we were having about, you know, you're like, not this, but I don't know what my this is. And I love your pursuit of just being consistent of, I'm going to figure out what this is.
Right.
Yeah.
That is exactly what it was.
Love it. Thank you so much, Kate. Thank you, everybody, Heather, for listening. Go check out schooltheworld.org. If you want to make an impact this holiday season, you can always donate. Reach out to Kate or through the website. And hopefully, I'll see you guys on a trip.
All right. Thank you, Heather.
This summer, I'm being incredibly intentional about community. My word for the summer is community and connection. And I just want to say thank you for being a longtime podcast listener, or maybe you're a new listener, and I wanted to celebrate you. And I wanted to create more connections. So what I've decided to do is do a merch giveaway. If you are unfamiliar, I have a merch shop on my store, so you can go check it out on my website at heatherchauvin.com. You can purchase anything you want. But what I'm actually going to be doing is I'm going to do a giveaway for my hat, my How Do You Want to Feel baseball cap, one of my journals, which is the Emotionally Uncomfortable journal, and my beautiful myrrh mug, which is called Excited Shitless. Excited Shitless is when you take the leap and you're like excited about your next level, but you're also terrified. So go check out the merch on my store. But here is how you can dive into the actual giveaway. Go to Instagram and find me at Heather Chauvin, Chauvin. And right now I have about like 19 or 20,000 followers. So if you're finding someone else that doesn't have that, that's not me. And all you have to do is follow me to be entered into the giveaway, and then send me a private message that says giveaway. That's all you got to do. Go follow me on Instagram at Heather Chauvin, Chauvin. I think there's an underscore after that. Follow me and DM me giveaway. And what we're going to be doing in a few weeks is we are going to announce the winner, and then we will reach out to you in your DMs on Instagram, and we're going to ask you which item you want in the merch shop. Do you want a hat? Which color do you want? Do you want a journal? Do you want a mug? Do you want a signed copy of my book? And yeah, that's it. It's all about connection, community, and gratitude for me this summer. And I just want to say thank you for being a listener. Thank you for, you know, all the messages that I receive on Instagram and in email. I'm just here to help women thrive. And this is not an emotionally comfortable journey, as you know, hence the reason the name of the podcast. And in order to attract more time, more energy, more money in our lives, we got to take some emotionally uncomfortable action. So I'm right there with you on the front lines. And yeah, go follow me on Instagram and DM me. Giveaway.